Recapping the weekend in sports and previewing the week ahead. This is FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night with Dalton Erwig and Corey LaBounty.
All right, welcome in. FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night. Dalton Erwig and Corey LaBounty with you on this Monday night. Ian Blair on the boards. And guys, ladies, we finally have live professional sports to discuss. Now, I know we've been talking MLB for over a week now, and of course, PGA Tour, NASCAR, UFC, they've all been out there for this point months. But finally, NBA restart back to 100%. NHL has restarted with their postseason play here for 2020, and I am maybe the happiest person in the earth right now as we have some basketball going on over our shoulder. And Corey, I know you're happy to have live professional sports back.
No question about it, Dalton. The bubble has not been busted in Orlando as the NBA players outside of Lou Williams getting some wings last week.
Yeah.
Basketball's right on schedule, and there's been some great NBA games that have been played inside the bubble so far, and you know, unfortunately, baseball is having their problems.
Yep.
And then you look at NFL getting back into their preseason swing of things, everybody arriving at training camp. So it's prime time real estate for sports, and like you said, live action sports is what you love.
Yeah, the bubble working perfectly, not only in Orlando but in Toronto and Edmonton for the NHL. Both leagues have announced recently that their most recent tests, zero positives. Obviously, a different story for Major League Baseball, and we'll get into that here in a minute. But I want to lay out tonight's show for you. Coming up in the next segment, we're talking with the one and only Roman Harper, an Alabama Crimson Tide legend, also a New Orleans Saints legend, which is why he's been inducted into the New Orleans Saints Hall of Fame for the 2020 class, and to an SEC network near you. He'll be on SEC Nation for, well, whatever games they're able to broadcast this coming fall. So we'll talk with Roman Harper here in the next segment. And then coming up later in the show from Saturday down south, Connor O'Gara will talk about the SEC scheduling news, now moving from a full 12-game season with four non-conference games. They're going to try to play 10 games this year, all in conference. That means adding a couple SEC games to the schedule for all of the teams. We'll get into that more later. Also, I got to lead off the show saying happy birthday to Tom Brady, 43 years old. All hail the supreme leader, Tom Brady. There's been a decree that we have to tell him happy birthday, and he's the supreme leader in passing yards, touchdowns, pretty much every stat in the NFL. Tom Brady, 43 years old, and he plans on playing at least two more decades.
He is definitely the GOAT, and I saw today where you have people like Warren Moon play until 44, and I think that if Brady has it in him, he can play to 45, 46 if you would like, depending on how Tampa Bay's offensive line takes care of him this season.
Yeah, so let's talk through some of these headlines really quickly because we don't have much time before we get Roman Harper on the show. But it's all about baseball right now and how they're faring in this new coronavirus world. And, the stats so far, not good for baseball. Last night, Braves finished off – well, they didn't finish the series off against the Mets. That'll be tonight with a great game between Soroka and DeGrom on the mound. But the Braves beat the Mets 4-0 yesterday. And some big news for New York. Yoenis Cespedes, a no-show to the game, didn't tell anyone that he wasn't going to arrive to play in that game against Atlanta. And then after the loss, the GM of the Mets said that, well, Cespedes had decided to opt out for the remainder of the 2020 season. Braves looking for the four-game sweep tonight. And they're 7-3, 10 games into the year. So a sixth of the season in the Braves looking good, just like a number of other teams in Major League Baseball. But this Cespedes thing points to a larger problem right now for Major League Baseball. The players did not want to do the bubble like we're seeing in the NBA and NHL. They had the option to possibly half the league play in Arizona and half the league play in Florida. Players did not want that, so they all decided to play in home stadiums, travel, keep fans uninvolved. But we're seeing right now that there's some big problems in Major League Baseball. Three series postponed over the weekend. The Miami Marlins and Washington Nationals, they did not play their scheduled series as the Marlins continue to deal with the 19 members of their team that have tested positive. Then the Phillies and Blue Jays series, they canceled that one after a couple members of Philadelphia's staff tested positive following their series last weekend against Miami. No players for the Phillies tested positive, so they should be back in action tonight playing against the Yankees, 4 days of no new positives. And then over the weekend, the St. Louis Cardinals three-game series against Milwaukee was called off. On Saturday, the Cards had one player and three staff members test positive. That number's grown as of today, seven players and 6 staff members. The league put out a statement and said the team's been quarantined since Thursday. They're going to stay in Milwaukee and continue to test everybody involved with the team daily. So the Cardinals' upcoming 4-game series against Detroit was supposed to be a home-and-home. They have now canceled that. They said the tentative plan is to resume the regular season for St. Louis Friday against the Chicago Cubs in St. Louis. But, Corey, the rumor out there now is that some of these Cardinal players, while out preparing to play against the Brewers, evidently went to a casino and partied in Milwaukee. And this, of course, follows reports that the Miami Marlins players were out at clubs in Atlanta before their players tested positive. The clubs in Atlanta getting every league in trouble right now with the Lou Williams at the strip club and these Marlins players reportedly out. So this brings a bigger question with NCAA and NFL kind of planning to do the same thing that Major League Baseball is doing right now, continue the season, no fans in the stands, but traveling to different places. Are the players going to be able to keep it in lines, the rest of the Major League Baseball season, or in the NFL and NCAA? It is going to be difficult for them to stay out of trouble.
I'm going to say no, Dalton. I don't think Major League Baseball, again, there's a lot of selfishness because, again, with the NBA players being put in a bubble on a campus in Orlando, meaning I had somebody ask me, well, what does a bubble mean? Are they truly in a bubble? No, they are in a restricted area to where there's no one coming and going from outside, so you're not having contact with people who may have asymptomatic symptoms. So you're in a situation to where I don't think Major League Baseball will get through this through the season because these are grown men, especially the NFL, to where you do have more players than what you have in Major League Baseball. If you're not going to put restrictions on it, I think there's going to be a lot of selfishness, and it's going to be real hard. Like Odell Beckham Jr. said today, he didn't think they should play. So that's a strong statement.
Yeah, and lots of NFL players already opting out of the 2020 season. We're seeing some college players do the same, and so much to get into tonight. Of course, Justin Thomas also won on the PGA Tour. Now the world number one heading into a major. We'll get into that and a whole lot more. Coming up next, Roman Harper, the Alabama legend, the New Orleans Saints legend. We'll talk to him about his new gig with SEC Nation and also that new jacket he'll be wearing as a member of the Saints Hall of Fame class. Listen up. We'll come right back. Sports Night, FM Talk 106.5.
Breaking down the big games and talking about the big names. You're listening to Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night with Dalton Orwig and Corey LeBounty. And, of course, all eyes on the upcoming college football season and the SEC last week joining some of the other Power 5 conferences and announcing they are going to a conference-only schedule this fall, moving the start of the season back to September 26th, moving the SEC championship game back by 2 weeks from, December 5th to December 19th, and also, you know, taking every team's conference schedule and adding 2 SEC games to that. Now, they have not done that little bit of important part of the schedule yet, but it's certainly going to be an SEC season and NCAA football season unlike any we've seen before. And I'm really excited to talk to our next guest. It's a legend around here, a legend for Alabama football, and, of course, for the New Orleans Saints, Roman Harper joining us tonight. Of course, you know him, first team All-SEC with Bama back in the mid-2000s, and then went on to have a long, healthy career in the NFL, most of it spent with the New Orleans Saints, a 2-time Pro Bowler and a Super Bowl champion. And then word came down back in June that he's joining the Saints Hall of Fame 2020 class and the newest member of SEC Nation on ESPN. Roman, thank you so, so much for coming on with us tonight and joining us on Sports Night.
Oh, man, no doubt, Corey. Thank you guys for having me. Great introduction, by the way, so thank you.
Oh, no, wouldn't have it any other way. It's Dalton Orwig and myself, and we'll be asking you questions, Roman, not only about what your high school career was like and your early time at Alabama spent there and then moving on to the NFL, but I want to start with your time at Prattville High School and your foundation there, your foundation in football. Bill Clark, he's just a superb coach, current head coach at UAB football. What Bill Clark meant to you in your development in high school football and making that decision to go ahead and play collegiately for the University of Alabama?
Man, I'm forever grateful for Coach Clark and what he's meant to me in my life. And, you know, I'm forever indebted to him just as a man and what he taught me at such an early age, the blessing in disguise. He came there after my 10th grade year in high school football. I mean, at one point in time, I wasn't even on the football team, guys. You don't understand that. It's not because I'm a troublemaker. It's just because me and the previous coach just did not get along. I didn't know if I would be in the where I'm at right now if it wasn't for Bill, Coach Clark showing up there in Prattville, going into my junior year. Really just changed the landscape and everything about Prattville football, man. And it's because of him where so many other kids that's come through have been able to be successful through Prattville. And he just kind of built the foundation. I was lucky enough and blessed enough to have him, a coach that gave me, put me in really just a healthy environment to actually want to see young black kids and other kids of all kinds of places and from that community to be successful and have a chance to get out there and grow and know that it's other things outside of Prattville.
Now, Roman, were you a Tide fan for life? Did you always want to go play for the Alabama Crimson Tide?
Not at all, no. So my mom and dad grew up at Alabama State. So they're both alumni from there. I grew up going to HBCU games my whole life. So being in Prattville, all we did was go to Montgomery. So I didn't really know that much about Alabama football. I knew about it because, of course we had our fan day and stuff like that in Prattville growing up. And all the kids, we did have Alabama Auburn. I'd be the one kid wearing the Alabama State hat. And everybody's like, what is that? And I'm just like, well, schools where my parents went to, blah, blah. So it was always a teaching and learning lesson. And then what I kind of learned early on in my life that if I wanted to play football, my mom tells me a story. She said that I always told her, Mom, if I play football, I don't want to play here. I want to go to a big school where you're going to be on TV and a Jumbotron.
Hey, when you're talking about that Jumbotron, you had an opportunity at the University of Alabama to see yourself on the Jumbotron, and one of the times that you had an opportunity to see yourself was when you guys beat the University of Tennessee, and my co-host right here, he's a huge Tennessee Volunteer fan, but the play that you made on Tennessee on the screen pass is they're going into the end zone. I think you put your face mask right on the football as they're trying to score, and led to a touchback and ultimately led to a nice offensive drive to where Alabama goes ahead and beats Tennessee 6-3 in that game, if I'm not mistaken. Is that one of your most memorable moments looking up at Bryant Denny's Jumbotron?
I mean, yes and no. I have way better moments than that in my college life. But, yeah, man, just that's what everybody else remembers me from. That's kind of like the play. No, Roman, I'm on the phone, son. Sorry, guys. My film
hey, no problem.
Over being, it's all good. And so that's what most people are going to definitely remember or think about me when they think about my Alabama career was that play, which was great because I actually thought he ran me over when it initially happened. I thought he ran me over because I heard the crowd go crazy, and there was no way that ball was supposed to fumble and do what it did. It was just really crazy, but I'm very thankful of it. It made everybody else remember who I was, and I'll be you can call me a legend, but it just really kind of put me up there as one of the biggest plays in Alabama history, and I'm very thankful of it. The best part was actually what happened when I went back to class the following couple weeks. I had a class that was once a week, and I didn't go for 2 weeks. I was just being a college kid, whatever I was doing. And then that's not important about the real story. So then I go to class, finally I show up, and I walk in, and I was a little bit late, and as soon as I walked in, the whole class gave me a standing ovation. And they were like, yeah, we've been waiting on you a couple weeks. You're about to game-winning play. Because they knew I wasn't sick. I've been on playing. But they just really happy and there to celebrate for me and what I did for the school. And to me, that's what's more prideful and shows you about Alabama football than anything else that I did on the field is about the reactions and the treatment that you get on campus when you are an Alabama football player.
That's an awesome story. Roman, I too skipped classes in college. Never got the standing ovation when I returned for some reason. I guess I never made a big play out there on the field. We're talking with Roman Harper, former Alabama Crimson Tide legend. Well, I guess you're always a legend, and also New Orleans Saints. And I want to talk a bit in a moment about you getting that new gig with the SEC Network on SEC Nation. But first, we got to talk about another huge honor for you that was announced back in June, heading into the Saints Hall of Fame class 2020. I imagine you were, over the moon when you got that great news. How did you find out you were heading into the Saints Hall of Fame? And then what was your reaction when you heard?
Well, Mr. Ken Trahan, one of the guys that's over the whole Saints Hall of Fame, and Jay Romig, they called me and told me the news and things like that. I was very, very honored. The crazy thing was that I'm not shocked about it because I know the other guys that have been in my class where I played with that have all gone in previously the last few years. And I knew once those guys were going in, I was like, oh, I definitely will probably be in. So that wasn't a part of it. But to me, I was so much happier because it allows me to tell my parents and actually give, the shout out to them and everybody else that was with me that helped build my career. The ones that poured into me when it wasn't that cool to pour into Roman Harper. and really just, you know, really talk about them and celebrate them. Not only that, but going in with one of my best friends in the NFL that I met through the years, Jari Evans, who to me I feel like gives my class, the class, the draft class of 2006, a real chance of having a gold jacket Hall of Famer for the NFL Hall of Fame. I think he's our best guy to do it. So it's just really, really happy to go in with him as well, because both of our families are like family now, and that's just because of all the traveling, all the winning we did, the culture that we helped create there in New Orleans. It's something special, and I don't take that for granted. I don't take it lightly either, and I'm just really honored and just love the fact that this is going to be a time I get to celebrate so many others that really poured into me and helped me become where I am.
Again, being a draft pick of the New Orleans Saints, right after Hurricane Katrina in 2005, having an opportunity to get yourself in that community and help bring the first Super Bowl to a community that had been starving to win their first world championship. Talk to me about what it was like in that embodiment of being in New Orleans in a time of rebirth.
I mean, it was kind of scary down there, I'm not going to lie. When you first go down there and you got street signs down, Walmart closes at like 6:37. Like, it was, you know, a lot of lights were down. You had some houses with 4 feet of water, some with none. You see the FEMA trailers, the blue tarps on the top. I had a teammate that had 14 feet of water in his house that stood there for a week. So it's kind of crazy to imagine how much that was, and kind of seeing the whole city come back, and especially looking at New Orleans now, right? So many years later, looking at it, and it's just completely different. All the businesses, all the places that you can stay, the options to do different things, it's just changed so much. And actually seeing and being a part of that whole rebirth and the new part of New Orleans and this whole winning tradition that now the Saints, you look at the Saints, they're one of the top organizations in the NFL, not in the NFL, but in the world. People want to go to New Orleans. People want to be a New Orleans Saint. Now, that wasn't always the case. When I got drafted there, my roommate Charlie Pepper called me and laughed at me. He was happy for me, but he also laughed and said, dude, you guys will never make the playoffs. And lo and behold, we went to the NFC Championship my rookie year. And not only that, but then we ended up winning a Super Bowl just a couple short years later. Nobody saw that happening, and especially with the past history of the New Orleans Saints. But now nobody cares about that. The history is all about winning now. And with the, you know, what Sean Payton, Drew Brees, and all everybody got to create there since 06 has been nothing but winning.
And that's two programs that you helped build the foundation for winners for years to come, with Alabama in the early 2000s and then the Saints, who, as you mentioned, compete year in and year out. And I mentioned it earlier, Roman, but it's been a heck of a summer for you. On top of that Hall of Fame announcement, ESPN bringing you on to the SEC Nation set with Laura Rutledge and a couple of pansy quarterbacks, of course, Tim Tebow and Jordan Rodgers, who I'm sure you don't think highly of at all, that you'll be seeing across the desk from you. How'd you end up working your way into that amazing pregame show?
Oh, man, well, I've been kind of grinding towards some things, man. You know, after I retired, you know, for so long you're just a football player, and every August I'm preparing for, you know, to go out there and play with my body and do what I need to do. Since I was in, like, fourth grade, and you retire, you've got it's the next chapter, you figure out some other things, your goals kind of reset. And so, you know, I've been kind of doing this thing, you know, TV broadcasting. I started wanting to do it a little bit more and more. Did some with New Orleans covering the Saints the last couple of years, Saints on Six with WDSU down in New Orleans. And then also did some with Charlotte, Fox 46 there, so covering the Panthers. And it's been cool. So then I think that's how I kind of got my foot in the door and kind of putting myself out there in that kind of way. And, you know, they would hold, you know, I guess they liked what I did, man, and welcomed me with open arms. First of all, I love the SEC. I think it's going to be a great opportunity. Tim Tebow, Laura, Jordan, those guys, they seem so awesome to work with. It's more of a family atmosphere. It seems it's going to be right up my alley. I'm just really ready to go back and forth with the quarterbacks. Like, all right, because they think they know ball, but like,
right.
I know some ball. Let me tell you, like I'm ready just to throw back and forth. And we've been around each other and talked some, and it's going to be great chemistry. I'm really looking forward to it because the SEC fans are what make the SEC so special. I know everybody loves their football, but it's, and the best players come to the SEC because of the environment and the atmosphere, what all the great fans bring. So I think we want to really play off of the emotions of our fans, making sure we include them. Because right now, COVID-19 is, you know, it's going to change things that the way we perceive and accept, you know, this next college football season, however it may turn out. But it's going to be different for all of us. But we all are very, very much so excited. I can't be more excited to be around the people that in this next opportunity, in my next chapter of my life, man, I'm just going to continue to try and flourish and be the best version of myself. I promise you, I will be honest. Not everybody's going to like you, but I promise you, I'm going to be honest. And it's going to be good TV, I promise you.
I believe that, Roman. We have about a minute left with you. I know you had aspirations of making the PGA Senior Tour. Are those aspirations still there? And are you a better golfer than your brother Brian?
I'm a much better golfer than my brother Brian. He's awful. But you know what? My aspirations, I'm not going to say they changed, but, man, I got four kids right now, man. My golf game has been awful. And I have not had a lot of time to get out there and practice. And to be good at golf, we all know you got to practice. But as my kids grow up, I'm going to get back out there a little bit more and more. Believe that.
Well, man, something about these Bama guys in golfing right now, just absolutely on fire. Justin Thomas and Michael Thompson winning here these last couple weeks.
Yes. Man. How about my man JT with a comeback? And Michael Thompson, too. Man, that was so huge for me. He hasn't won in a long time. I was so excited because I get to meet these guys at the Alabama Celebrity Tour, the golf tournament that they do. These guys are awesome people. And it's so humbling to see them win and cheer for them and be able to text them. Communicate. I'm so happy for my Roll Tide.
Well, Roman, we have so much appreciated your time with us here. Thanks for coming on with us. Best of luck to you on SEC Nation coming up this fall, and we hope to talk to you again.
Oh, man, thank you, guys. Appreciate it, man. Thank you, guys, so much. Look forward to, again, Roll Tide.
Roll Tide. Thank you, Roman.
All right, I won't say Roll Tide, but I will say thank you, Roman. That's Roman Harper. You can follow him on Twitter, at Harp41, and continues to do great things in the community and on your television screen very soon. SEC Nation coming at you. All right, coming back, we're talking with Connor O'Gara with Saturday Down South. We'll break down this strange new 2020 football season we have on the horizon. This is Sports Night, FM Talk 106.5.
You're listening to FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night with Dalton Erwig and Corey LaBounty. Call the show or text your thoughts to 251-343-0106.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night. I want to thank Roman Harper for coming on with us in that last segment. It's always great to talk to a legend, also an Alabama football legend and New Orleans Saints legend. So great to talk with Roman Harper, and also excited to talk with our next guest here. Writes for a site that I read pretty much daily, Connor O'Gara, senior national columnist with Saturday Down South, and writing about football, or at least what we're hoping will be a 2020 football season coming up this fall. Connor, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Yeah, appreciate you guys having me. You know, you say write about football this fall, and I've never appreciated the ability to do that more than right just now. Hopefully we'll have plenty of football to talk about, but if not, I mean, you know, we'll make the best of it and go from there.
Yeah, and, you know, there's some hope out there and also some things that cause you to maybe lose some hope that there will be a football season, of course, with the bubble working so far in the NBA and NHL. But we're seeing what's happening in Major League Baseball, which is probably more like what the upcoming NFL and college seasons will look like, with the teams not necessarily quarantining and going out and traveling and still playing these games. So I should probably wait and ask you this question at the end of the interview, but I'll go ahead and knock it out, and you just kind of mentioned it. 2 months from now, Connor, first week of October, in your opinion, will we be talking about collegiate games that have been played already, or are we going to be talking about the season that could have been? Do you think we're going to get some college football in this year?
I think we will, but there are a lot of hurdles ahead still. I mean, I feel like we've been saying that for the last 4 months, mm-hmm. but it's true. And I think that they're going to move mountains to play in the fall, for better or worse. That's just the way that it seems like it's going to go, with the way that administrators have talked about this, the way that they have tried to put these policies in place to be able to best deal with a situation that, quite frankly, nobody has any experience with. I mean, this is all so unprecedented, and it's shown in the way that they've reacted with coming up with testing policies within the conference and coming up with a new schedule and all these different things. There's no protocol for this. And right now, it still seems like a bit of a hurdle to overcome, the whole what's going to happen when students come back on campus thing. Mm-hmm. And right now, if you're a college football player, you have legitimate concerns about what that's going to be like when you have to go into classrooms. And I question what that's going to look like. And it makes me wonder why administrators haven't come out and been like, hey, even if you're a college football player, you're allowed to take classes remotely, exclusively. At this point, that should be a given. Mm-hmm. And it seems like they're still trying to figure those things out. And that, to me, that's just a bit baffling. So You know, I think that we will be playing college football this fall, if I had to guess, but it certainly won't take, I feel like it's going to take a lot of things to go right over the course of the next 6-7 weeks to make that happen.
Connor, some pre-COVID conditions for the national champion LSU Tigers at quarterback. Peter Parrish from Central of Phoenix City, the dynamic four-star quarterback, has officially been entered into the transfer portal, and all that kind of started transpiring prior to the spring game that was going to occur on campus. But LSU now does not have a lot of depth at quarterback. And with that being said, I want you to touch on that and also on the power of the players in the NCAA right now.
The quarterback depth at LSU is something like I feel like has been really lost in the shuffle of this weird offseason where not a lot of people have been talking so much about the football things when there have obviously been bigger things in front of us. But if we do have a season, that's a major, major topic of discussion that needs to be addressed, is how the defending champions deal with that situation. Everybody has known about Miles Brennan and why there has been hesitancy for him to be the go-to guy, the starter, the guy that everybody at LSU gets behind. If he was going to be that in 2018, they wouldn't have gone out and gotten Joe Burrow. They, of course, did that. But can he keep his weight up? Can he handle the rigors of an SEC football season? And that's a major question. All of a sudden, you're looking at his two backups. It's a couple of true freshmen who have, you know, they might have enrolled early, but we're talking about one of the most unprecedented offseasons we've ever seen in college football history. Might have got a spring game even to be able to get these reps in. It is a legitimate concern with LSU. And, oh, by the way, you've also got the team that ranks dead last among Power 5 schools in percentage of returning production on the offensive side of the ball. Mm. Not ideal for LSU this year, but it's something that I think if Steve Ensminger can manage, this will be an LSU season that I think has a lot of potential, but it's a season that has a lot of question marks each and every week that Miles Brennan takes the field. And, you know, to address the other question, this rise of player involvement and players taking stand and everything, we've seen that throughout the offseason, but not necessarily in the way that we saw it over the weekend with the Pac-12 players. To have hundreds of players come out and demand equality on a variety of issues is something that I think that is going to be fascinating to study, the way that administrators handle all of this, because it's one thing if you have a player or a pundit or, you know, a couple of players or a few people that have opinions on that, but it's totally different when you have players this close to the season and that type of volume that say, yeah, we're not going to play this year unless you meet our demands on this, this, and this. Is it a little bit of a, you know, kind of shoot your shot sort of deal? Yeah, I think so with some of these things that they're asking for. But at the same time, this is a time and a place when people are actually listening. And maybe they'll get some of these demands that they're asking for granted to them.
Yeah, and you know, as part of the larger picture here, I mean, take the pandemic out of the picture for the moment. These players have been looking for leverage for years, trying to get paid, you know, the name, image, and likeness, which they've come quite a ways on over the last couple years. There's never been leverage like the players, not only in the Pac-12, but nationwide have right now with this virus. And, you know, they might almost look back in the future if they don't use this moment to try to get some of their conditions met and wonder what could have been. It looks to me like the Pac-12 were the first to strike out on this, but you wrote a very interesting article whenever fans of another conference or another team see this happening in the Pac-12. I know their first thought is, well, man, I hope that doesn't happen in the SEC. I hope these players don't put this season in peril. But in your article, you wrote that it's not necessarily comparing apples to apples with the SEC and Pac-12 right now.
It's not, and part of that is because look at the very first demand that was on the Pac-12's We Are United movement in the Players Tribune. It was, look, we want to have the ability to opt out of this season if we feel unsafe with COVID-19 and have our scholarships honored. They still hadn't done that yet in the Pac-12, and the SEC had already had that taken care of in the middle of July. So I think that obviously helps the SEC to sort of prevent this sort of thing from happening. But, you know, I think that the other thing to remember is that this took over a month to put together. The SEC is getting to the point now where it doesn't necessarily have that time if these players are going to make some sort of a stand like that. Now they could look at the Pac-12 and say, there's our blueprint right there. We're going to demand the exact same things as they are. But I kind of tend to think it would really need to happen in a hurry in order for them to really get enough momentum behind this and not just be a few guys here and there. There could absolutely be a few guys here and there, and we've seen SEC players like Anthony Schwartz, who came out in support of this, the Auburn receiver, fastest player in all of college football. So I think it's possible that we see instances like that, but I'd be surprised at this point if we did get a player movement. I won't rule anything out because, as we've learned in 2020, nothing is impossible. And if this is what players feel like they need to be able to speak on at a time when they do actually have some legitimate leverage, then I think they're going to do it. Whether or not it gets results, that remains to be seen.
It'll be interesting to see also. You know, we haven't heard of many players opting out yet. I imagine we'll see that start to begin here over the next few weeks. But, you know, let's presume we are able to at least start this season. It'll already be unlike any college football season we've seen before. Of course, the Big Ten was the first to announce, then the Pac-12, that they're moving to conference-only schedules. The ACC, I think, had a bit of hope that the SEC would play against them in some of those important games towards the end of the schedule. So they set it up with 10 conference games and one non-conference games. And then, not to be outdone, the SEC came back and said, well, we're only going to play conference games this fall. So we know that they're going to play the 8 conference games that were scheduled on each team's schedule for this year. Where are those other 2 conference games coming from? I know they've been batting around a few theories. What do you think is most likely to come as they figure out who those extra 2 teams will be on each team's schedule?
If you had asked me a few days ago, I would have said the future crossover deal is what's going to happen. But obviously there was some resistance to that, right? I mean, and understandably so. If you're in Scott Strickland's position, the Florida AD, why wouldn't you try and push back when someone says, hey, we're going to add Alabama and A&M to your schedule, no big deal. And meanwhile, your rival is, you know, going to add Arkansas and Mississippi State. Of course, there's going to be some sort of resistance. Mm-hmm. You know, talk about whether or not there's already a disparity in their schedules to begin with. But, you know, I think they're going to end up going with some sort of a strength schedule model, and they're going to try and do the best they can to make it so that it's not lopsided and that maybe there is some sort of a balance. But I come back to this. Regardless of what they use to decide all this, each SEC team is going to be playing 10 of the possible 13 SEC opponents. There's really not going to be a whole lot of teams who all of a sudden get lucky. Mm-hmm. And I know that's kind of a foreign concept in the SEC, because when you have less conference games than everybody else besides the ACC, it does often feel like, hey, the schedule is very important. So I do think, though, that we're going to hopefully have a resolution this week, and we're going to get to figure this out. Immediately, everybody's going to want to know, well, who got, you know, a raw deal and who really benefited from this? The reality is, if you're going to win the SEC this year, playing 10 conference games and then having to go and win a conference championship as well, you're not going to get there by getting off easy. I mean, that's what I keep coming back to. And I think that the SEC champion is once again going to be essentially given an automatic bid into the playoff. The type of year that the SEC is going to have might not even matter, because when you go into a year like this where it's conference-only play throughout the Power 5, with the exception of, you know, Big 12 teams playing perhaps one group of 5 team, mm-hmm. you know, you're really going to be entrenched into those preseason narratives. And the SEC is going to have at least 7 teams start off in the top 25 of the AP poll, potentially 8 if people want to put Kentucky in there, which I think the Wildcats are definitely deserving. So, yeah, I mean, it's a weird thing to have to sit here and figure out, but hopefully we're going to get some clarity on it real soon. And pretty soon we can get really mad about the schedules.
Yeah, I agree with you there, Connor. And I know we only have a couple minutes left with you here, but it's a situation to where, because it's on a week-to-week basis and kickoff has been pushed back to the end of September, would it be wise, or would people go crazy if you saw the Iron Bowl that's normally played right around Thanksgiving time to the beginning of the season, so you can go ahead and get those guaranteed games out of the way, the big money games, even if there's only going to be a limited number of fans in the stands?
I think that there is a really, really good chance that a lot of these rivalry games get moved up to week one or week two, and the Iron Bowl being one of them. I think that if you're a college football fan who is attached to specific games at a specific time of year, get rid of that right now. Get rid of that attachment for this year, for 2020, because everything that we know about the traditional schedule is out the window. All right. I mean, we saw these non-conference rivalries in the ACC and the SEC that came to an end this year, their consecutive year streaks. And if you are dead set on there being, you know, third Saturday in October, or, oh, you know, Florida Georgia's got to be played the first weekend of November, you know, this year is going going to put all that away. It really is. And I wouldn't be opposed to having the Iron Bowl week one or week two or something like that. The interesting thing is I wonder if there's going to be some resistance from SEC teams who don't want to have that big headliner showdown week one after what's been just a weird, weird offseason in every single way possible. And I wonder if there's going to be a little bit of pushback and they're going to want to have that maybe week two where they can, you know, have all these headliner games just in case, you know, we do get a stoppage or something like that and the season either has to stop altogether or it continues in the spring. But I think that there's a lot of momentum to make that happen, and I wouldn't be surprised if the SEC does have a bunch of those rivalry games that we're used to seeing at the end of the year moved up to the beginning, and maybe the Iron Bowl is one of them.
Hey, man, that would be so weird to see some of those games happening early. But at this point, I would take it. We're talking with Connor O'Gara, writer, editorial, or columnist with Saturday Down South. And I guess we'll wrap it up on this question, Connor. You mentioned the college football playoff earlier. I think there's, you know, too much money involved if they are able to make it through the season to not play those three ever-important games at the end of the year. But then you start to take a look at the rest of bowl season, and I think the Red Box Bowl maybe became the first bowl game to cancel for this year. What do you put the odds at right now of playing not just the championship, but all the rest of these bowl games?
Well, I think it's going to be a case-by-case thing, but I do think that they're going to be extremely flexible to make these bowl games happen. That I believe. I understand the Red Box Bowl had some different issues with the 49ers and not renewing that contract that sort of led to that, and the ball had been rolling on this before all of this started. But I do think that we are still, if we are playing college football, I think we will still have these bowl games because a lot of these, you know, these bowl games, they flat out need it. I mean, they're going to be willing to be flexible, and if there are some sort of guidelines laxed in terms of the capacity allowed within these specific stadiums, then I think they're going to be willing to make it happen. But you know, I was even talking to Gary Stokin, who runs the Peach Bowl and the Chick-fil-A kickoff game, and I asked him point blank, like, can you guys have a game with an empty stadium? He said, no, absolutely not. There's just everything is dictated from that. And even, you know, they were talking about having 25% crowd capacity there, you know, at Mercedes-Benz. And even then, they're still trying to figure out all these different ways of getting their money back and making a profit off of this. So that's what they need to figure out if all of this is still going to be hovering over us in 3-4 months from now, which I obviously wouldn't rule that out at this point. And right. I think it's going to be dependent on whether or not they can get those contracts in place to make it happen. I know there's flexibility on the points of all these different bowl games. It's just going to be a matter of kind of figuring out and who can be flexible and what can we make happen.
Connor O'Gara, you can read his outstanding stuff, Saturday Down South and SaturdayTradition.com, and follow him on Twitter at CJ O'Gara. Thank you so much. Some outstanding stuff from you tonight, and we'd hope to talk again.
Sounds good. Appreciate it, guys.
All right. Connor O'Gara with Saturday Down South, and man, I sure hope we can get some football played this fall. Corey, of course, a lot still needs to be figured out before then. The Sun Belt Conference made an announcement earlier today, or at least the rumblings coming out from there. I'll let you know what the Sun Belt's planning on doing for the upcoming football season. Of course, that means a lot to South Alabama fans down here, so we'll talk about that coming up, along with a couple other things in sports as we wrap up Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5. Dalton Norwig and Corey Labounty with you on this Monday night.
You're listening to FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night with Dalton Orwig and Corey Labounty. Call the show or text your thoughts to 251-343-0106.
All right, welcome in to Sports Night FM. I forgot what words I was going to say there for a second, Corey.
It's all right.
Sports Night FM Talk 106.5, wrapping up another great show. I want to thank Roman Harper for coming on with us earlier, and also Connor O'Gara. And, you know, it seems like all we've been talking about tonight are scheduling for the Power 5 conferences and all the changes that are being made to college football for this hopefully upcoming season. And we've been wondering for weeks now what's going to happen with the Sun Belt Conference and University of South Alabama, who the very first team that they lost off their schedule, the very first opponent they lost was Grambling State when the SWAC conference announced they were postponing fall sports. Unfortunately, that was going to be the home opener, the brand new Hancock Whitney Stadium on campus. So that was struck from the schedule. And then with the SEC's announcement last week, that big game in Gainesville against Florida in week three was also struck from the schedule. And with non-conference opponents on the list for this fall, that left a couple Conference USA teams, UAB and Southern Miss, I think opening the season against Southern Southern Miss, and then UAB was scheduled for week four. Well, now it appears today the decision was made. Sun Belt Conference will not be playing conference only. They're going to try to play 12 games this year, the 8 conference games and then 4 non-conference games. Of course, that leaves 2 games for South Alabama to make up, but pretty important to me that they kept that rivalry. Well, I guess you can call it a rivalry with both teams, Southern Miss and UAB.
Yeah, if you can get those games in, that's going to be huge for South Alabama and those other schools also.
Yeah, and of course, that news came after the Conference USA said the same thing that Sunbelt's saying now. So it seems like that's a go for this coming football season. Also, the Big 12 will be the last Power 5 conference to make their announcement. And from what I've been reading, it's not official yet, I don't think, but Big 12 looks to kind of be taking a page out of the ACC's playbook. They're going to try to play 9 conference games and 1 non-conference game this fall. So if you're keeping count, Big 10, Pac-12, SEC, conference only, ACC, and Big 12, mostly conference only, but also 1 non-conference game that they'll have on their schedules. Hopefully we'll have some football played this fall. And we have to wrap the show up with some big news out of Tuscaloosa tonight. Also some big news out of Baton Rouge. And John Petty. John Petty, thank you. I almost said John Lewis with how much we've been talking about the passing of John Lewis over these last couple weeks. John Petty announces he's coming back to Bama, and Trenton Watford heading back to LSU. Big gets for those programs to keep those two players in-house.
Two big-time players I think will be future lottery picks deciding to come back and enhance. Hopefully college basketball will take place here in January at the latest, if that's the case, if they're not able to start here in November, depending on this pandemic. But what a player Petty is, again, prep here in the state of Alabama along with Trenton Watford. So two great players going to help both of their teams respectively, and I'm glad both of them decided to come back to school.
Well, let me get your take as a Bama fan. This is the year for Nate Oates, right? He's got to start showing some.
Year number two.
Yeah, it's only year number two, so it's not like they'll fire him unless he goes winless. But they've got to start putting it together on the court.
Yeah, I mean, you look at Herb Jones coming back along with Petty and the recruiting class that they have. If those guys can gel and play together as a team, I think Alabama and Auburn, again, already a great rivalry with two great basketball teams. You'll have two top 10 basketball teams here in the state of Alabama. Not football, but basketball top 10 state teams.
Unreal. Only in 2020 can we say that. And that brings us to a close. Sports Night, FM Talk 106.5. We had a couple great guests on tonight. Hopefully next week we'll be able to talk more about the NBA, NHL, MLB, and all the sports that are ongoing. That does it. Sports Night, FM Talk 106.5. Coming up next, Sweet Home Canabama with Jennifer Boozer.